I'm not quitting YouTube. I never said I'm quitting YouTube. I spend all my time on YouTube, just obsessing about it. I'm in the trenches. I'm at the cutting edge. I don't want to teach YouTube. I genuinely do not, because then every Joe Schmo is copying my thumbnails and like the structure and all that. I don't want that. If I only cared about results, I would have 3 million subscribers now, because I would have just, but I didn't want to do it. You're at this fork in the road, right? Where you're like, do I just like, okay, I didn't really want to do the marathon anyway. Like, the other option would be, I'm going to pursue this and I may lose my friends. I keep getting, like, I don't want to hang out with them if they keep making jokes about me and I can't drink. And so you end up being a bit ostracized. I have very close friends, a bunch of them that I can call up at any point. They don't drink, you know, we do other fun stuff.
I'm going to eat a raw testicle.
We have like alternatives for alcohol that are healthier and more fun too.
Powerful brain boosting supplements.
And legal. So many DMs that I get was like, oh, I could teach you how to make $100,000 a month. I'm like, I know how I could, but I don't want to.
Leon Hendricks, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I want to start. Last June, you were 2 months away from running out of money at your current expense rate. And then Andrew Kirby reaches out to you and convinces you to do a weekend workshop teaching some things you know about YouTube, which goes on to make $120,000 in 4 days. I'm interested, I mean, that's a great story, but I'm interested in how did your beliefs kind of change around there? Because I know you were kind of hesitant to kind of come across as an expert to your audience.
Yeah, so that I was a tough nut to crack. For Andrew and for anyone really. I mean, so many people have come up to me and they're like, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you sell a course? So many DMs that I get was like, oh, I could teach you how to make $100,000 a month. I'm like, I know. You don't need to teach me. I know how I could, but I don't want to. And people would always say, why don't you want to make a course? Why don't you want to do anything in that realm? And it's because I don't want that positioning. I don't want to be that guy. I want to make self-improvement content without ever selling a course. And the workshop that we did, first of all, I was desperate, right? So I was like, I know a lot about YouTube. I know I can support entrepreneurs specifically and business owners with YouTube. And secondly, it's just a live weekend workshop. It's not this course that I'm selling. It's not any of that. And what got me over the edge was that I did not promote it to my audience at all. Mm-hmm. My audience had no idea this was happening. So it was only pushed to, we only tapped into Andrew Kirby's audience, which was on school. So it was a separate platform. It was highly targeted towards entrepreneurs and people who are already interested in content creation. And so I'm like, okay, cool. If it doesn't tap into my audience and I don't annoy them with that and I don't blast it out there megaphone style, then it's like behind the scenes, behind closed curtains, and only targeted towards people who are really interested. And I was like, cool, let's do it. He was taking on all the marketing and all the promotion. And I just had to show up and just like give the sauce. And people loved it. I mean, and it's not open for sale. There's no access you can get to it. And it's not a thing that I'm milking now, except for recently when I did a fundraiser. You may have seen that. I was, of course. I mean, of course you saw that. Yeah. So, yeah, I posted that. And then even then people got upsetty spaghetti with me and they were like, oh my God, like you always have these idiots. you saw those comments?
Yeah, some of the comments, I was like, I can't believe this, to be honest.
Oh, dude, I'm thinking about making a video just about this whole phenomenon on YouTube that I'm currently witnessing, which is this whole... It's a massive distrust for creators. And I mean, the vast majority of people were like, oh, this is cool. He's raising money for charity. Awesome. Yeah. And he's giving access to something that he did last year, which is just a workshop. I'm not a course. I'm not a guru, but I know a thing or two about YouTube. I don't know everything. I suck too sometimes. Sometimes videos don't pop off. Also because I choose a video topic that I'm passionate about rather than, NoFap 2024, whatever, which whatever is guaranteed to work, right? But a lot of people got up. I don't know if it's a lot of people. It's just a loud minority. It's just a loud minority. And so people, for context, I was raising money for charity and I told them, hey, for a donation, you can get access to the workshop that I did last year, which I never talked about publicly, but I want to open those gates for those of you who want to donate. And it was a steep donation. It was like $500, half the price from what it used to be, which is worth it for a business owner, not for Joe Schmo who, you know, is, has no money and is just like, oh, I want to like see if I could maybe make a video, YouTube video once, specifically targeted towards entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that donated. And so the comments were saying things along the lines of like, oh, first you quit YouTube and now you're like a guru. Yeah, and it's like selling out, you know, it's like
it's a charity.
First of all, I'm not quitting YouTube. I never said I'm quitting YouTube. The title, I get it. It's misleading, and that's the first assumption you go to. But in the video I explain, hey, I'm just quitting the types of videos that I have been making. Mm-hmm. And so people immediately like, you know, other creators were like commenting on creators quitting and I kept appearing in those videos. And so there's some things I get to clear up. And yeah, it's a charity. I mean, but even just like some people saying like, seems fishy to me. It's like, okay, what do you think is happening? Do you think I am pretending to be raising money for charity, but I'm secretly pocketing the money? Like, how evil do you think I am? You know? And I want to make a video about this whole phenomenon on YouTube that I see right now, which is this massive distrust for creators, because there are so many channels out there whose content is all about commenting on what other people are doing and why it's bad. It's cringe. It's bad. It's cringe. It's fishy. It's like supposedly
everything's a scam.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's, man, it is very frustrating. But yeah, we raised $22,000 for charity. It goes to children who suffered immensely in turbulent families and are looking for foster care. And I was at the facility myself with the friends who I'm raising money with, and we crushed the goal. So worth it.
Yeah, definitely. For a few online people getting a bit annoyed. And the interesting thing I find is that with things like this, the people who were in it last round, and I'm sure the people this round as well, like got a lot of value from it and thought it was worth it. You didn't have a bunch of people who were like afterwards saying, oh, I feel ripped off, you know? So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. There's no one who was like, oh, this is not that good. Like, I'm not a course creator. I'm not someone who spends half his time thinking about how can I market this? No, I spend all my time on YouTube just obsessing about it. I'm in the trenches. I'm at the cutting edge. And I mean, this is starting to sound like a marketing pitch. So people are probably like, oh, he's saying all this so that secretly. It's like, no, I don't want to teach YouTube. I genuinely do not, because then every Joe Schmo is copying my, I don't know, thumbnails and like the structure and all that. I don't want that. So I wanted to work with a select few of people. And now I do have one-on-one clients. It's currently just one, but they pay me a lot. Like, these are the types of people who, you know, when they're in Miami and they want to go to Vegas and the only option is flying Spirit, they book a private jet for $40,000 for a 2.5 hour flight. And so for them to spend a little bit of money of their money on YouTube so that they can grow because they have a business on the back end, it's like very monetizable for me. I can easily help them because they suck at YouTube.
And they can make a few tweets as well. Back.
Exactly. And so that's consulting. That's not me being a guru, being a, hey, here's how you become successful. No, those guys, they don't need to hear any of that. They just need someone to guide them. And like, that's what I do a few hours a week. It's great.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think it's interesting how the people who are leaving those comments probably have never even like gone through any of these kind of things before. So they just,
that's the thing,
outside.
That was the first video that popped off for me, which was like, I wasted $50,000 on fake gurus. And I made that video because that was like a trending thing. And I was like, I had maybe less than 1,000 subscribers at that time. And I was just looking for something to pop off. And I was like, I do not want to be one of these guys that like jumps on this trend and exposes them. And I do want to be one of those guys that has a video that blows up. And so I made the video as someone who actually spent money on those a lot. And I don't mean the mainstream like Grant Cardone and Tai Lopez, although I put these in the thumbnail because those were the hot topics and those are the people that I commented on as well in the video. Mm-hmm. But in general, I've invested a lot into that stuff. And most people who are criticizing it, they haven't, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I have a nuanced perspective. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a lot of distrust and there's a lot of like flashy marketing and there's a lot of good stuff out there. And if you basically throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? And I'm sure the majority of people, they know this, right? But it's just a loud, dumb minority who think, oh, everyone else thinks this is great, but I know. It's like, no, there's nuances. And so in the video, I talked about how to look for the ones that you can trust, the ones that make sense, right? And the ones that really know what they're talking about. And again, I'm not affiliated with any of those. There's no financial incentive for me, but I give a nuanced perspective. And even though I give a nuanced perspective in the comments, people are still saying like, oh, good job for exposing them. It's like, I didn't expose anyone. And I gave a different perspective, which is like, hey, it's actually not that bad, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, people just see the title and thumbnail and then they just go with that.
How do you kind of deal with things like that? Because it sounds like, to be honest, these guys do annoy you quite a lot.
Yes. Especially recently, with the whole fundraiser thing, that was annoying again. Chris Williamson talked about it recently too on his mm-hmm. podcast, like how the comments get to him. And I think I know the solution. But doing it is another thing. And the best solution is really don't read the comments. Like, just don't read them. And I do that, and it's working, right? And with the fundraiser, I peeked in, and that was a mistake. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know anyone in my life who comments anonymously on YouTube videos. I don't know a single person. So I don't even know what type of person is commenting anonymously on YouTube videos, sometimes with anime profile pictures, you know? It's like, those are usually the ones. So yeah, it's like the video, my most viewed video is the one that has the most hate on it. And the comments are just like, oh my God, so terrible. It's this video about a friend of mine who...
Mike Black, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He became a friend of mine when I made the video about him. He, during COVID, he decided to start from scratch and like make $1 million from zero. Right. And obviously, I mean, he named it, okay, starting, like he didn't name it that way because he was very careful with that. But in my video, I was like, hey, he started homeless because he did. Right? It's like, hey, I don't have any stay, but like immediately a lot of people thought, oh, he's like mocking homeless people. If you watch the video, you're not doing that. And so I've had so many people come up to me and they're like, oh, that was a great video. I loved it. And I'm like, yeah. Do you see the comments? Like so much hate. They're like, really? Why? Like they don't get it. They're like, there's hate on it. You go through the comments. It's just like pure, like evil millionaire. So disrespectful. Like, oh yeah, it's fake. And it's all that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained all the things in the video. It's like, yes, he had a video team. Yes, he paid for those through his previous business, but he didn't use any of the money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is the video only has a 80% like ratio or something. So 80% of people actually did like the video. And some people commenting like, oh, this must have so many dislikes. It's like, actually, no, it doesn't. And the people that I meet in real life, they're like, oh, this is a great video. And I have no idea why it would get any hate. But the loud minority, it's just like, and I made my first experiences with that when I uploaded my video where I put up a billboard to find a girlfriend. I thought it was like a funny thing. I was trying to figure out what content to make. And that was one of the videos that I made. And it went viral on Facebook. And 2/3 of the comment were extremely negative, like accusing me of just the worst stuff possible. And it went viral and it just kept going and going. It was my first experience with that. And a few things I learned there was, okay, whenever I went on someone's profile, I was like, oh, their opinion doesn't matter. They had nothing going for them, right? And when you went on their profile, you saw that by the time I've seen their comment, they've already commented on three other things that they were upset about, that they shared, that they're, you know, were raging about. So these are like hyperactive people who are like, just, they hate on so much stuff. And so they already forgot about me. And they are missing the context. They don't know if they knew me, if they knew my intention behind this and who I am, they wouldn't be upset. So they're just upset at a projection of me, at an idea of me that I'm representing that is upsetting them in their own life, right? And so that they've already forgotten about me because they already comment about other things, and just don't look at it, you know?
Yeah.
That's really it.
There's this nice quote I like where it's like, there's two mistakes to avoid, and it's like caring that they think and thinking that they care. And it's like, that many people who you think care probably don't care that much. And the people who do care don't care that much. Like the percent of the time, like you said, they just move on right away. And I think there's something to be said there about like who you surround yourself with, because you said people you spoke to in your real life are saying, yeah, I can't see why that would get any hate. But I think you've probably done a good job of like curating yourself a bit more with like positive people who are like striving for more, I would assume. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I agree. It's funny to see these people online, but like where actually are these kind of people? They wouldn't say anything in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think they're just very active online and very critical people. And I mean, I used to be very negative and critical, not towards other people where I would like comment, like that was never me. But man, it's a miserable way to live. You know, it's like you're training your brain to look for what's wrong. You're training your brain to see something and spin it in a bad way, where you assume the worst intentions or bad intentions in general. You assume that there's some trust to be broken, that you have to have your guard up, that this is probably a scam. And like, man, if that shows up in the way that you comment on things, it shows up everywhere in your life. Like, and that's a miserable way to live. That's like a recipe for depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. And man, this is what you, I believe this is what you see with a lot of channels who make their content about criticizing others. You're training your brain to find, okay, what can I comment on here? What's wrong here? Mm. And like, man, it's miserable.
Yeah. Especially because it's, our brains get good at pattern recognizing, and then eventually you just, everywhere you look, you just see negativity.
You train your brain that way. Yeah. And then you have an ad read for BetterHelp. I wonder why, because you and your audience are all about, look at what they do. Look at how cringe this is. Look, you know, like the channels who are making like, oh, look, this is so cringe. Oh, look at this guy's talking to this girl. It's so bad. It's so cringe. Okay, this guy's putting himself out there. Maybe he was cringe. Maybe he's a douchebag putting that on the internet. Maybe. But like the more you comment, and this is a lesson for all of us to think about. When we apply these rules to other people and like, oh, that is cringe, I can't even look at it, the same rules apply to us. So the more we scrutinize other people,
we think
the more we scrutinize ourselves. Exactly. Like growing up in high school, I remember this girl who was so judgmental of everyone. She was like the gossip girl. And she was like, oh, I hate this person. She's so dumb. And this guy is an idiot. And he's so cringe. And she's so ugly. Like, how did she think about herself? I became friends with her because I was just friends with everyone. And yeah, when we would get drunk, I mean, she, like, that side of her came out where she was very miserable. She was like crushed by her own expectations because she was applying them to everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you watch content that's like cringing about other people, like guess what, you're not going to be the most confident in social situations. Mm-hmm. You're going to be the person who's like, oh, I'm kind of awkward, like that was kind of awkward. Because it you just apply it to everyone. Because yeah, I mean, cognitive dissonance, I don't know, some sort of bias where it's like you can't, it's hard to be a hypocrite. You have to rationalize it somehow, where it's like, okay, if they do this and it's cringe and they didn't execute it perfectly, then you better have some good mental gymnastics so those rules don't apply to you for some reason, you know?
Yeah. No, I think it's absolutely true. And I think I've seen it, when I realized it, I think I heard it from Gary Vee. I was like, yeah, that's crazy, because back when I was like trying things online and, you know, doing things kind of more entrepreneurship, I was like worried that people were going to judge me. But then what I realized was the reason I'm worried about judgment is because I'm judging other people. So I assume they're judging me. So once I managed to like let go and kind of develop from that, I was like, oh, I'm not really worried what other people think, because I wasn't doing it to them, you know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it is the best, like cheering people on just because they take action. Because man, like that changes your relationship with taking action and getting messy, you know, and just doing stuff that isn't ideal. Like, yeah, I mean, I know creators personally who are very judgmental of other people's content, and they're like, oh, that was terrible. That was terrible. Those are the people who are most perfectionistic. Like they don't get stuff out. Like they watch a video from like this, from let's say, for example, yesterday, and they're like, oh, that was bad. I'm like, that was world class. And they've made better videos before, you know? And those tend to be the people who are like, oh man, like I'm extending the deadline again because I want to get feedback from this person, and I don't know if this scene flows perfectly. You know, it's like, man, you know, celebrate other people and like, yeah, look for what's right.
For sure. Do you think maybe you were falling into that a little bit? Because I knew you did talk about how, I don't know where I heard it, but somewhere that you were really focused on just trying to make, just go viral every time, and you weren't posting as frequently, and that's why like the second, like last quarter of, or last half of last year was the, no, yeah, last quarter, the 90-day sprint you were doing, where you were just like, I'm not worrying about perfectionism, I'm just getting things out. Was there something kind of, you had that kind of thing where I need to stop being so perfectionist and switch over?
Yeah, I was struggling with perfectionism, yeah, for a long time. And it didn't come from the place of like being judgmental on others, and then maybe there was a part of that. Maybe there was a part of that.
That's awesome.
But for me, it was really like a cycle where the less content you upload, the better the content that you do upload has to be. And so I just got into a cycle and yeah, I mean, where does it come from? Just a ridiculous standard, and just like that I apply to myself. So I don't apply it to other people, but I have this, I don't know, I have this thing where it's like, okay.
It's a gift and a curse.
Yeah, yeah. Mine has to be like it can't be like good. It has to be really, really good. And so, yeah, it's a gift and a curse. So it forces me to like get good at stuff, but it can also be debilitating. So yeah, I'm finding the balance now, and even just the way that I'm getting back into content now. So now that I'm switching to long form talking head, podcast style, still on the same channel. Like everyone's like, hey, what's your plan? I'm like, I don't know. I'll just wing it. I don't have a plan. And that's like so freeing. And yeah, I've gone through a lot of shifts the last few months. That just like, I don't know. I'll just get messy. Just get messy and then clean it up along the way. That's really it.
Sounds like an interesting plan. Yeah.
And yeah, when you upload more often, like if I were to upload weekly,
you can test more.
Exactly. I can test more. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. I have a next one next week. Whereas if you upload once a month, it's like, we got to figure out the packaging for this and like really nail it. And we have like 10 different variations because
you have to make up for the last one.
Exactly. And then if you have two in a row that didn't do so well, then you get like desperate and you're like,
and then you don't work as well then as well, once you get a bit panicky, really.
You're full of doubt. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Full of doubt. And you start making things that, you know, you didn't really think were best. And you become more perfectionistic because you're like, oh, maybe it is the intro. And you just like spend so much time on that. Yeah. It's not a way to live.
Yeah. So I know you said you didn't really have a plan for the podcast/long form, but I'm sure you have a great network. So are you planning on bringing on guests, or is it going to be mostly you?
I think I'll start out with some episodes just me. The video that performed best last year in terms of viewer satisfaction, like people just told me like, this is the best video of the year. This is great. I rewatched it multiple times. I sent it to my friends. The comments were just like, wow, this is really great. I think it almost hit 1 million views.
That's ideal, mate.
And it was the video that I put the least amount of time and effort into. And it was just me sitting right here talking about this book, this idea, and then adding some flavor to it with like, hey, this is what Andrew Huberman said that kind of, you know, is aligned with this. And then there's this idea and that idea, and just like bringing different sources in, just things that I just learned and that I was thinking about, right? And this is how I like to make content. It's just like, hey, I'm kind of learning this and I think it's pretty cool. And like, this is how I'm applying it to my life. I'm not the expert, you know, I'm just like sharing it. And people are like, wow, that was great. That was the best video yet, like the whole year. And I'm like, man, some of these videos have broke my back and bend over backwards like crazy. And it didn't perform. People said that it was really good, but like not like this. So that was very freeing. And so I can do that over and over again and like simplify the editing a bit. And yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to consider. I think you were trying to bridge the gap between kind of education and entertainment. And when you're trying to do like the entertainment stuff, it really does have to be a lot more visually aesthetic, I think, and, you know, jump cuts and zooms and all this stuff like Mr. Beast. But when you focus more on the education side, I think people are more there for the credibility because this person's worth listening to, and also the actual value they're getting of the information. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, 100%. That's probably one of the big shifts as well for me this year, because for the longest time, the vision of the community that we're building and the channel that I'm building is like, I want to make self-improvement more mainstream and make it just accessible for people who usually aren't into that stuff by, you know, not taking myself too seriously, being a bit of a goofball, not being a guru who sells a course, but just like, hey, this is what I'm learning. Could be wrong, you know, and just adding entertainment to it, right? So instead of like talking about like the 5 things to be mentally tough, okay, let me hire 2 Navy SEALs, get my laziest friend, make a fun story about it, and then exactly. And in that will just be some lessons, right? And so I tried it for the longest time, and I think it is half targeting 2 target audiences. Mm-hmm. Like there's 2 target audiences and both of them are getting kind of like half of what they want. There's one that like, they just want to be entertained. They just want to watch, yeah, stuff that is like entertaining and fun. And then there's people who want to learn, mm-hmm. right? And I guess sometimes it's the same person that is just in a different mode of viewing. Like they come back from work and they're just like, I just want to shut my brain off, watch a comedian. I can't compete with those. Like I can't compete with somebody who makes the craziest, funniest, or like most numbing content. It's just like, I just want to be entertained, like Game of Thrones, whatever. And then on the other side, I can't compete with Alex Hormozi. Like if you're in a break from work and you're like, I want to figure out this problem, like how do I get a new client? How do I grow my business? How do I become profitable again? You're not going to listen to my stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. You go to Hormozi, right? And so I got to the point where I'm like, I think I've tried it enough. And even a year ago, I was like, okay, let me give it another year where mm-hmm. I try this, you know? And so like Yes Theory, for example, incredible. The community they've built, like huge inspiration. They don't have educational content. They have entertainment content where you learn something, but it's like, I want to be taken on a journey here, right? Mm. And so I think where I can shine more is the educational side. Not that I'm like, I know everything, but I think a strength of mine is able to communicate things in a way that they open people's minds to a new perspective. Yeah. And so I think that's what I'm good at. And I don't need to be the one who has the best advice, because there's other people who have the best advice. And I just like share it. It's like, hey, Andrew Huberman says this, and this person says this, and here's a book that talks about that. And like, I don't need to be the source of it, because what do I know? But I'm able to
synthesize it.
Exactly.
In the words of Andrew Kirby.
Yes.
I mean, it is a bit of a shame because I do like, I really do love the idea of like making self-improvement cool and bring it more to the mainstream. Do you think it's like possible, or is it just like, is it genuinely, is there something you could have done, you think, and there is a certain set of circumstances that if met would make it a lot easier, or is it just genuinely these people don't want the same thing?
I think it is possible. I think it is possible. I mean, there's even comedians out there who are like, they do some real talk sometimes and they're like, just, you know,
Joe Rogan.
It's like, set a goal, get yourself together. Like, I dreamed of this. And, you know, it's like, self-improvement is all around us. Like, it's not even this like sub-niche where like some people are into it and some people aren't. I believe it's inside of all of us.
Just how much?
Yeah, how much, or like how much do we embrace it? And like, do we even call it self-improvement? Because self-improvement has this connotation of like self-help. It's, you know, it's kind of like try hard. It's kind of like sometimes, yeah, right? And like, yeah, it doesn't have the best rep, and it's easy to make fun of because people take themselves too seriously, and it's kind of, it can be cringe, right? And so the way that I want to make it mainstream is just like, be easygoing, be like a, be a dude, you know, be a relatable person that like doesn't take himself too seriously and talks about it, and yeah, build a fun community around it so people actually want to be part of it. Because yeah, like I think for most people, when they say, hey, I think I want to run a marathon, I think I want to like train and like get fit and like stop drinking, just like I have this goal that I want to do, they get a lot of jokes from their friends. Right. And the friends, they, you know, yeah, they're going out, they're getting drunk, and they're like, well, you're not drinking? What is going on? Like, what are you doing? You know? And exactly. Right. So they kind of like, don't leave us. Exactly. The tall poppy gets cut, and like, it's not even like, oh, we hate you now, but it's just like these little comments. Right. And, and before you know it, you're like, oh, man, like if I'm not drinking, like, I can't really hang out with these people because this is all we do.
It's unbearable. And so, being intoxicated.
Yeah. And like, if you're at this fork in the road, right? Where you're like, do I just like, okay, I didn't really want to do the marathon anyway. Like, yeah, I started listening to David Goggins, but that's kind of cringe anyway. It's like, easy. Yeah. Whatever. I'll start like, I'll go with my friends. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the other option would be, I'm going to pursue this and I may lose my friends because I keep getting, like, I don't want to hang out with them if they keep making jokes about me and I can't drink. And so you end up being a bit ostracized. And so I think if I can build a community where, you know, we're like, hey, come join us. Like we don't take ourselves too seriously a little bit. Right. But we're not too cringe, just a little bit. Then, yeah, build a community of people that you can join. And it's like, I think that helps people make the jump because it's often followed by this lonely journey to when you decide to start your own business, to get healthier, all of that. Yeah. And if we can build a community for people, it you know, it can make it, yeah, more mainstream. And like the drive to improve is, I think, in all of us, in every human being. It's just that whether they identify it as like self-improvement or not, because it's within us. Yeah.
That's really interesting because I had this other guy, Kenny Bender, you might be aware of him. He's a self-improvement YouTuber, kind of more on like the nofap and like meditation side of things. But he said that, and I've seen it with a lot of people I know, where people want to start improving and then they go in this bit of a lone wolf phase where, like you said, like if you do decide to go for the marathon, you are going to maybe not completely lose your friends, but you know, you're going to be more lonely than you were. And then once you go through that, then you kind of start attracting the other people who are interested in that kind of stuff. But like, there seems to be this period that people go through where they are by themselves. And it sounds like what you had when you were kind of building your e-commerce business and trying to get to Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it really is just a phase. Like, I made this video years ago, Why Ambition Makes You Lonely, and it resonated with so many people on such a deep level. And there were some really big names that watched that video and reached out to me, and they're like, yeah, I feel this way. And people are like, oh, I'm sorry you feel this way, Leon. I'm like, I don't feel this way. Like, I have, like, for years now, I've had, like, for the last 4 years, like, especially moving to the US, awesome. Like, building my network here. Man, I have, exactly. I'm in Austin, Texas. I have very close friends, like, a bunch of them that I can call up at any point, and they'll drop everything, and they show up for me. And a lot of friends who I can just hang out with, go to parties with, events with, right? And, like, they don't drink, you know? Like, we do other fun stuff, but we don't drink alcohol.
Brain-boosting pills.
Exactly. We have, like, alternatives for alcohol that are healthier and more fun, too, and legal. And, yeah, it's just... It's easy to be healthy. Like, it's hard not to be. It's hard to, you know.
Long term.
And so,
definitely.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a phase, you know, it's a phase that you go through. And I hope, you know, by building a community and just like, just even just like having online communities like this, like my dad, for example, mm-hmm. he was into stuff like this, into entrepreneurship 40 years ago. And, you know, he grew up in a small town. Like, I grew up in a small town. He grew up in a village, small village, where, like, you only knew a few people. And he was ambitious then. Like, mm-hmm. what do you do then? You mm-hmm. don't, you can't just watch someone online who talks about this stuff and, like, reach out to people. And, like, there's none of that. Like, it's all just up here. And, like, man, that is lonely. And now he's like... Now he's learning about YouTube and like these communities, and he's like, oh, Leon, like I joined this group of like people who are into this, and like it's great. Like, that wasn't around when I was growing up, and like we have that now. Yeah, and so I think a lot of people wouldn't even get into self-improvement if the internet wasn't there. But so I think now a lot of people, whether it's self-improvement or knitting or pottery or whatever, mm-hmm. you're able to get into it now because you get this random content sent to you and you're like, I really like this. And you would have never known that you liked it. And then you're like, oh, I'm not into the stuff that my friends are into. I'm into this stuff. And then I think, yeah, I mean, we have so many opportunities now to join the communities that we want, and we're more exposed to those communities. So we're more likely to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Naval, go off and do our own thing.
I think Naval said something like the internet has now made the possible total number of careers infinite, but most people haven't realized this yet. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, there's always going to be infinite problems, and any problem is an opportunity for business.
Yeah. We talked a bit about earlier about like credibility, and how if you want the best business advice, you go to probably Alex Hormozy, because he's obviously got the proof that he definitely knows what he's talking about. You've featured quite a few people on your channel. You've had like Brian Johnson, Rian Doris, Marissa Peer, and many more. And I was listening to Mr. Beast's retention expert, Mario Jews. I don't know if you know him. Uh-huh. And he said he thinks credibility in educational content is like one of the number one things for retention. I'm wondering like how much you've kind of thought about that over your journey of YouTube.
Mm-hmm. I think credibility, yeah, some sort of credibility statement in the intro is important. And it can be like, hey, I built a $100 million business. It could also be, hey, I spent about 1,000 hours studying this, so you don't have to. Or like, I spent $50,000 on different courses and coaching, so you don't have to. Like, I've peeked behind the curtain. It could also be something like something as simple as like, this absolutely took me from this point to that point. Like, once I learned this, a whole new set of possibilities opened up for me. Right. And I don't think credibility is the most important thing. I think it's one way that you can tap into. And mm-hmm. this is where I can't win. Because I'm in my late 20s now, and yeah, I can't compete with somebody who's like in their 40s and has lived a full life. And like, I can compete in other things though. So I think
it's part of it.
There's three. there's three different ways that you can like, there's three reasons why people watch, I believe. Number one is to be entertained. Number two, it's to learn something. And number three, it is to, and I would also say learning something is also being inspired, you know? Mm-hmm. I just put these into one bucket. You could also put that in a separate one. And lastly, it is to be able to relate. Mm-hmm. Like, you've seen these videos of people who are like, I'm 31 and I have zero friends.
Yes. Yeah,
like, there's nothing entertaining about it. There's nothing really educational about it, because they're like, I have this problem and I don't know what to do, but it's relatable. So there's an emotional connection, right? So you could call it relatability or connection. And so you can win by just being the $100 million guy and having the most credibility. You can also win by just making the video really entertaining and fun. And so people can kind of shut their brain off and also kind of learn something maybe, or they don't and they just learn something. Or you can just be the most relatable and you're like, I'm at the beginning of my journey. I'm kind of figuring this out. I don't know. This is what I'm struggling with. And people are like, oh, I connect with you. Like, I see myself in you and I want you to win because I'm inherently selfish and I see myself in you. And so where can I win? It is relatability and just being like, yeah, vulnerable. And Homozy does that too. So he's like, yeah, he's got everything. But then also just like adding fun to it, like entertainment, right? Even in the podcast, like, it's not like I'm going to go serious mode. But yeah, credibility is one of the things that can lead to high retention, 100%. I don't think it's the only thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you don't have it, you know, you can't. So like, if you crack a joke in the beginning, man, being funny is it's incredible for retention, not just on YouTube videos, but in life. Like, for you to talk to a stranger, like, I want to listen to this guy. Like, this is fun, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, cracking a joke is like, man, that goes a long way. And yeah, I think my channel is not the thing where people are like, oh, like, I gotta, like, I'm going to learn the most here. But it's just like, no, I connect with this guy. I like him, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And it feels like I'm talking to someone that I, you know, like, that is like me. You know, and so, like, do you know the podcast My First Million, for example?
Yeah.
So those two guys, they're just shooting it, you know, they're just like hanging out. And do I learn the most while I'm listening to them? No, but I learn about cool news or like cool ideas that they've found. It's like a little bit, but it's not like, I don't know if it's the best advice, but it's just fun to listen to. And it's relatable because it's these two friends who are talking and I'm like, I feel like I'm in the room and it's fun, right? So yeah, that's how I think about that.
Yeah. I like that. IRL retention. That was my key takeaway there. Okay. Yeah. One more thing is, I think if anyone's kind of looked into YouTube growth, they will have come across this idea that ideas are important. But what I heard from Andrew Kirby recently was like another layer above this. It's like positioning, and it's like, where is the unmet demand and the supply that you can provide there? I remember you saying in that video where you were like, look, I'm deciding to switch to podcast format, that you said part of the reason was it was quite unpredictable with the views, and from video to video, you'd put a lot of effort in, but you weren't always getting like consistent views, which is bad for business. Do you think, because you kind of pivoted quite a lot, I know you did pranks before, and then you did like more business entrepreneur stuff and like trying to pie Graham Stephan and all these different things. Do you think switching positioning kind of maybe cost you a little bit, maybe?
Oh, that was the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the, I could have millions of subscribers now had I not been like, if I only cared about results, I would have 3 million subscribers now, because I would have just kept making the entrepreneurship videos because they worked. I crushed them. People love them. And there's unlimited content, but I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be the guy who's like, okay, I'm featuring everyone else's story. And like, that's not my unique ability. That's not where I can shine most. And so, and then I swapped around way too much because over the last few years, I've kind of figured out what I want to do. And the next evolution is the podcast thing, because I'm good at editing. I'm good at storytelling. I can do all of these things. I can be goofy in front of the camera and like show a journey. But it's not the thing I'm incredible at. And so, yeah, absolutely. That was the biggest thing. If I would have just kept making the entrepreneurship content, I know I would have been successful. And people tell me that. And I'm like, I know. But here's the thing. I didn't want to. And so while in the last 3 or 4 years, it looks like I left a lot of growth on the table, I think if you zoom out like 20 years from now, it's good that I didn't do that. Because, you know, sometimes we can set a goal that is short term, that is very high, and we can achieve it, but it costs us a much bigger goal long term. Yeah. And so that's really it. So I'm glad everything happened the way it did. Because, yeah, I mean, what really got in the way of my results was that I'm a bit of an artist and like I'm a bit like, spontaneous. What do you call it? Yeah, not necessarily spontaneous, but I'm a bit stubborn. Where I'm like, no, I don't want to make another video about this, even though I know it'll work. I don't want to go into these topics, even though I know people want it. No, I want to talk about this because I think this is more important and this is what I want to talk about. And, you know,
channel. Yeah.
Which is exactly like, yeah. Yeah. Right. And so that's what has been keeping me going. I don't know if I would still be doing YouTube if I were doing the entrepreneurship content, because I would probably be like, oh, I don't like this. What am I doing here? You know? So most important thing is that you enjoy the content. And like, I've continuously peeled back the layers of what I want to make, what do I like, what do I not like, and I'm very clear on what I like and what I don't like. And so yeah, like every year has been me peeling back another layer. I'm getting closer to the core of the ideal thing that I want to make, and I think it's never ending. It'll keep evolving. The onion keeps growing, and the center, you know, starts moving a little bit because of that. And so it's just about peeling it back and getting closer and closer to it.
Yeah. I want to double down on that, because I saw, I think it was a clip from Alex Hormozy, like you were saying, the short-term goal might not necessarily be best long-term. And he's like, if you had to build a tower in 10 seconds, you'd just build it straight up. But if you had like 10 years to build it, you'd build like foundations and you do it wider at the bottom. So, and this is something that leads in pretty well, actually, because I heard you say that when you were doing your e-commerce business, you didn't really actually like it that much. And that's part of the reason you sold it. And that you wanted to work on something you're passionate about. So yeah, I'm wondering how important you think that is for you personally, and then maybe for other people, that you actually like what you're doing. Because you did manage to, like, you know, push through with the e-commerce business and sell it for 650K. So it's doable, but like, is it optimal?
Definitely not. Definitely not. And there's a lot of people who are like, oh, like passion is overrated. Like, I'll just start any business. And it's like, well, you like business. You don't care about what the business is, but like you like the game of business. You know, it's like, of course it is important what you like, that you enjoy it, because like you're not going to do it for very long. And so, man, there's just so many contrarians who are like, they want to find a reason against it. And it's like, long term, yes, it's optimal. It's optimal. Like, yeah, short term, no, you can make a lot of money with a business that doesn't matter to you. And I think that's an evolution that I see a lot of people go through. And this is maybe what I would recommend too. Like, do not start your first business to be the passion thing, because more often than not, it happens to be the thing that a lot of other people like too. And so it's very competitive. Like, you know, some guy who likes going to the gym and he's like, hey, I think I'm going to start like gym clothing because I like the gym. It's like, well, you're competing with Gymshark and 100 other big brands and 1,000 medium brands and 100,000 small brands. Like, how are you going to compete? Right. It's like, oh, I'm just going to like learn and learn and learn. It's like, here's the thing. You won't even learn that much because you won't even be able to go through the iterations. When you start a business, like I did, like my business was like baby products. Mm-hmm. It was baby products. I don't know if I want to talk about it specifically because guys who bought it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
don't feel
it was pressure. A niche. It was a niche baby product. Mm-hmm. And I was selling it in Germany and also other European countries, only on Amazon. So it was very niche. It was not diapers. That's what people immediately think. But it's like, imagine like, I don't know, like imagine baby products, but it's like for sleeping. Baby sleeping products. It's like onesies and whatnot. Let's just imagine that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sell that. You know, or very much fewer people. And so I was able to compete there. And what I learned was, okay, how do you source a product? How do you get capital? How do you launch the first product? Then once you launch the first product, how do you increase sales? How from there, how do you get another sales channel? How do you build systems so that you don't go out of stock? How do you hire an assistant so that they can take care of the supply chain? How do you then systemize it so you're completely removed from the business? And then how do you sell the business? I learned all of these stages. I learned them all in this two-year period. Somebody who starts a passion business, they're going to be like, how do I get my first customer? How do I get my first customer? How do I get my first customer? Because nobody's buying your stuff, because why would I buy yours if I can buy Gymshark or whatever, right? And so you can go through all these iterations of like, and all these stages by just taking a business that is boring, that is predictable, that is a proven model, which is e-commerce, and in a niche that isn't that competitive. So you can go through the iterations and it doesn't make you the most money, but you get the reps. And like, that's really the biggest benefit I got out of it. It's like, number one, confidence. Like, hey, I sold the business before. Cool. Mm-hmm. Means I can do stuff. And I learned a bunch of stuff. Tangible skills that now they apply to YouTube. Like the things I learned about Amazon SEO, I'm like, okay, what are those rules for YouTube? And I knew how to learn it because I've learned something else before. And that's really it.
I guess it comes back a bit to positioning. Would you say that if you're going to do something for your passion, you need some sort of edge?
100%. I mean, there's so many entrepreneurs who are like, yeah, I want to talk about business and the things that I'm thinking about and the things I'm learning. It's like, okay, who cares? Like, why would I listen to you if I could listen to Homozy or, you know, like literally a billionaire who's making content out there. Mm-hmm. And so you need, like, the question to ask yourself in anything you start is like, where can you win? And just like, is there somebody else who can do it better than you? Where, you know, where can you win? It's really being in a category of one. So sometimes it's also just like, as a creator, it's just like, okay, you're a girl or you're a different ethnicity. Literally, like if there was a female Alex Homozy called Layla Homozy, like I can assure you her female audience is much bigger. And there's people who listen, there's women who listen to Layla and not Alex, because I can relate to her. She's like me, you know? And so, yeah, if there was a female Casey Neistat, boom, that could be a niche. Like you can do the same thing as Casey Neistat, but just because you're a woman and you have a kid or a child, or, you know, you talk about the challenge that you go through as a woman, boom. Like Casey can't compete with that. Boom. And I mean, the same thing goes with any business. Like where can you win? Mm-hmm. Is it, can you compete on price? Can you compete on like just the branding or like just something that's different? And this is especially as a creator, you have to be really honest with yourself. Like there are people who are like, oh, it's good to add. Like, you know, Leon said that humor is one of the best retention hacks. If you're not funny, don't try to be funny, because it's better to not try than to execute it badly, humor specifically. Mm. And so will you be able to compete on that? Like, yeah, then don't do it, right? Compete on something else. Can you compete on like specific knowledge that you have? Maybe. So it's really for people to figure out.
Yeah. Are you a fan of like the blue ocean strategy? Because I've heard that thrown around a bit with like Jake Tran and also Andrew's talked about it before.
Yeah, that's basically it. Finding a blue ocean, right? So where can I compete? I can't give you the best information. I can synthesize it well and I can do it. Yeah. In an entertaining way and in a way that it's relatable. Right. And I can be vulnerable. So like, where I can compete.
Did you ever specifically do that exercise though? Because there's this exercise where you look at all the competitors and write down them on different metrics and then see where you can like weave in and out basically overall.
I don't really write it down. It's just like a thing that I'm observing and just, but I guess I'm making them and doing the exercise in my head. And so with podcasts, for example, I could be like there's so many podcasts out there, right? That are like, I'm going to yeah, I'm going to interview entrepreneurs and athletes and just like interesting people who have achieved something. It's like, okay, that's every other podcast, right? If you have a podcast about interviewing creators, cool. That's already much better, much more niche. And like, how can you stand out there, right? So with my podcast, I could look at Chris Williamson and be like, oh, like I could do what he's doing. And I can like make it very cinematic, get really cool guests about like current events and psychology and all that. And maybe my growth edge could be is that I ask really good questions. It's like, I can't compete. I can't win against Chris there. And I don't want to because that's not my thing, right? It's not my, like I'm not the best question asker. Like I could learn it. I could get really good at it. But like, why would I compete on that? So if I'm thinking about podcasts, where can I stand out? Like, so that's why I'm thinking, okay, what isn't out there yet? And what do people want? And I think, okay, I could be like Joe Rogan. It's just a conversation. It's like, not enough. You know, like you can't just do that. So I'm like, could I do a hybrid of it? Could I have different sections in the podcast where it's like, hey, this is where I'm talking about a specific topic that I've like synthesized and like, here's some information. Another piece is like a bit of an interview. And then another piece is like me and a couple of co-hosts and we're just like hanging out. So it's a bit of a variety show that doesn't exist in self-improvement. Okay, maybe I could do that, right?
Yeah.
I think most self-improvement podcasts are people interviewing experts and that's it. And it's just an interview. But like, what if it was actually an entertaining self-improvement podcast where it's two guys and a girl that are the hosts and they just have great chemistry and it's fun and it's entertaining and they kind of share like a continuous story of their personal life where they're like, you know, one goes through an experience and the next episode they follow up on it and they're like, they're fun and they like, they're kind of poking each other and having fun and they also bring on guests and it's conversational. Like that doesn't exist yet in self-improvement. So like imagine impulsive,
yeah,
but in self-improvement. Impulsive, but the guests are Andrew Huberman, right? that would be like, that doesn't exist yet. It doesn't exist yet. And so, okay, cool. That could be it. So that's my hypothesis of where this could go. We'll see.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. A lot of podcasts do seem quite like cold and like robotic. And it's just like, someone's just like, right, I've got these questions and I have to get through them. And I'm not like going off track at all. It's just going to be question one, question two, question three. But that's all interesting what you say about like more kind of relatability. And I guess that like you say checking in with the podcast hosts and you kind of get to know them better over the episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And having a community on the back end, like a lot of people talk about having a community, but they don't have a community. They just have an audience. And it's just everyone is looking at the creator. Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't make it a community. A community is a group of people that make stuff happen even when the creator isn't there. Mm-hmm. So Yes Theory is, I think, the only example that I can think of that have absolutely crushed it, where their community members, they have meetups, they organize their own get-togethers, they have their own communication channels without Yes Theory knowing about it. And so that is a community. And so I don't see that in self-improvement anywhere, which is weird because don't a lot of people like that want to connect?
I'm thinking like maybe Hamza, if you see it. I don't know how active you're on school, but Hamza's got a couple of school groups and I think he does kind of stuff like that. Do you need to go soon? No, you just
great example. No, we can do another 10 minutes.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is a bit back to what we were talking about with YouTube before, but I'm interested kind of like what separates like good to great, because I know quite a lot of people they've had like a breakout video and you know, they get like 100,000 views, something like this. And then how do they kind of capture that and then continue to grow? Because I see a lot of people, they'll have like a spike and they get all excited, but then they're not able to sustain that. And then they kind of slump back down again.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's good ones to good consistently. And then good to great is another evolution that I see. But from going from good ones to going to good consistently is just about knowing what worked and being able to replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people, they get lucky once and they just hit the right topic, but they don't know why it actually did. And they think they do, but they don't actually. So I always like to hunt for or dig for like principles, meaning what is true every time? And if I can disprove it, it's not a principle. So like, why did this video do well? Oh, maybe it was because of this, because of that. But it's like, okay, but this is other video that also popped off and it, yeah, that wasn't true. Okay, we need to go deeper, right? And so it's hit or miss. I mean, for me, obviously, too, I've had lots of ups and downs, lots of videos that didn't perform. But yeah, just being able to increase your... distinctions. Like, the more patterns you notice, the more likely you are to succeed. And so a lot of people think, let's say, for example, okay, if I make a crazy face in the thumbnail, it works. But it's like, okay, I can show you a million examples where that's not true. What's really true? And then you make a distinction, right? Oh, it only works then, but not then. It only works for this audience, but not for that audience. And so somebody who, let's say there's somebody who has a ton of, like, just like they hit again and again and again, they have a lot more distinctions. So they're like, yes, this works, but only then. Like, for example, I have a lot of people who are like, oh, you should do like a split thumbnail because there's this other video that did well and you could do it here where it's like you have a before and after. It's like, okay, does that work for this specific title in this specific topic? And they're like, well, it did before. It's like, no, actually it doesn't work here because distinction 1, 2, 3, and 4. And like, this needs to be true and this needs to be true and this needs to be true, but it's not true here. So the person that has more distinctions and sees more nuances is able to make a better hypothesis and a better guess. And so they're more accurate more often, right? Mm-hmm. And so every time something works, it doesn't work, you ask yourself why, and is there a pattern between these so I can make more distinctions? It's like the example of like this kid who like walks around and is like, oh, sees a dog and it goes, oh, dog. And it's like, yes, that's a dog, great. And there's a cat and it's, and the kid goes, oh, dog. And the mom is like, no, it's a cat. And then from there, anything that's been furry has been a dog, but now there's a distinction where it's like sometimes it's a it's a dog, sometimes it's a cat, and then it sees a raccoon, it's like, oh, cat. It's like, no, that's a raccoon. And like, okay, if it's, if it has these colors, if it looks this way, it's a raccoon. It's like you make more distinctions, and then as time goes on, the kid becomes more and more accurate. And so that same thing happens with YouTube, and I think that's how you become, go from good once to good repeatedly or more often. And then from good to great, I think it's just about time. Like, it's just about time. And I mean, the people that I consider great at content creation are people who have gone through like cultural shifts on YouTube and have come out on top. So there's a lot of people who are like, their shelf life is like 5 to 7 years and they figure out what works. They made the distinctions and they're able to replicate that result. But then when the whole wave is changing and now it's not about vlogs anymore, it's about like highly curated content or like spectacle content, they're not able to keep up because they're not willing or able to just like break down the whole foundation, like reinvent themselves. And so there's a bunch of creators who reinvented themselves and they've come out on top every time. And that's a skill that you only get to develop every so often. And that's kind of like the thing that I'm going through now. So maybe this whole podcasting is not going to work out, but like, there's no way, like I'm going to figure it out. And so I will have another, for me, I'll have another like success under my belt, which is like, yeah, I've gone through iterations and I've come out on top. I've changed things drastically and I've come out on top because I'm able to figure out the distinctions, the things that work. And like, yeah, like PewDiePie is a great example. Like he used to make gaming content. Then he used to do meme reaction. Now he's doing vlogs and he's successful every time. It's like, oh, it's because he has a big audience. It's like partly true, but there's plenty of people. Yeah, there's plenty of people who had a big audience who, you know, things weren't going so well. And Ryan Trahan went through the same thing. Ryan Trahan started out with reaction content and was doing well. And then he started making these videos where he's like, oh, let me survive on a penny for a day and trade up. And initially, that's what a friend of mine told me. He used to watch him. And then he recently found out that he was like 14 million subscribers. He's like, what? How? Like, I remember watching him years ago and he made this reaction content that I loved. And then he started making other content and his views dipped like crazy. And I stopped watching. I was like, this is it. It's like, no, he came out on top. like he actually blew up, right? And so I think the same thing happens for anything you do. Like there will be evolutions, there will be reinventions. So whether you're a musician, a YouTube creator, or a business. And so when you're able to break down the foundations of the principles that you've learned before and like start from scratch, and you're willing to, like you just build a new level of anti-fragility and just like,
Yeah, I love that. Okay, it really does sound like a scientific method then, the way you kind of look at it. How can someone like kind of pay down that ignorance debt as quickly as possible? Is it just getting stuck into YouTube and just studying outliers, or like how do you get those distinctions figured out?
Yeah, for me, it was a lot of studying. Like I, even just like a simple practice of like when you're learning packaging, like 15 minutes a day, I would go on the homepage and just like, okay, which thumbnails and titles capture my attention? First of all, they capture my attention. Second of all, when they have captured my attention and I'm looking at them, they make me want to click. And then why is that? And then I would write down why that is. And man, if you do this for 3 months, every day, 15 minutes, you'll be in the top 3%. You'll be in the top 1% if you count everyone who's ever, you know, like you'll be a top 1% title and thumbnail creator, or like you'll be in the top 1% of people who know about that stuff, because man, you'll notice patterns. I mean, at least that's what happened for me. At the same time, this is also how my brain works. And like, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing more and more that that's just how I do things, and other people succeed other ways.
Mm. Yeah.
And so if people are like, yeah, if they approach things like me generally, then this is a good way to do it. But if people are more intuitive or just like going with the flow, then this may not be the right thing for them. So yeah, that's how I do it.
Yeah. Okay. Just one more thing to wrap up. I've heard you say that your most significant mentors and kind of people you learned from were Tony Robbins, Jeff Hoffman, Richard Branson. There's others as well. And you also listened to this econ podcast in the early days, kind of step by step. I'm interested, like, who you learned the most from for YouTube, and then also who you're listening to now to like keep learning and take the next level.
YouTube specifically?
Yeah.
Man.
We can go more general if nothing's coming to mind.
I mean, initially it was very general. I just soaked up everything. There was no one person that stood out. I was just like a sponge, just like listening to everything that I could. Right now, it's just my own study, basically. Just like looking at what people are doing rather than like what somebody is synthesizing for me. Because I can, like, there's so many people out there who teach YouTube and I'm like, no, wrong, bad, no. No, it's just not, like, they don't get it yet. Film Booth is incredible. I love Ed from Film Booth. He's the only one that I can, where I feel like, oh, he gets it. Specifically for the educational niche.
You guys with Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. And so even if you look at some of the mainstream creators, like they have tens of millions of subscribers or hundreds of millions of subscribers, I would not listen to their advice for me because they don't know. They know the mainstream entertainment, like young audience. They don't like, to, like I was at many masterminds, and like, I remember this one time where we were at a retreat with Shopify, and there was all these creators. I was the only educational creator there. And I had this video, now it's called How to Stop Wasting Your Life. Performed really well.
TikTok eye.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I remember asking a couple of very prominent subscribers with over creators with over 10 million subscribers, what do you think the packaging would be? And the ideas they had were like, I'm like, that's terrible. Like that's, they have no idea. They have no idea. And so right now there is no one that I can learn from that is teaching it to the masses. No one. And so, and that's a beautiful thing, because it's, again, it goes through the evolution where it's like, okay, you can learn from people who teach it, but you're only going to get to a certain level because you will have to surpass them. Right. And so the best learning I can have now is just talking to my audience and like interpreting what they're saying on like, how can I make better content? And then also just talking to fellow creators one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I was at a mastermind with Sam Oven, or like a mm-hmm. weekend retreat with Sam Ovens, Chris Williamson, Rian Doris, and just yeah, like talking crazy. To those guys. Yeah, talking to those guys who are in the trenches, it's like, oh, that's great. Like, you'll learn a lot of stuff there, but you won't find content online. But even just like taking things from other sources, like for example, I would listen to just like somebody who does screenwriting, mm-hmm. you know, for films, or like Disney, somebody who does like, exactly, or somebody who does theater, you know, and they may not even be well known, but they know a lot. Like, you can learn things from those people and just like apply it to YouTube. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I like that, going outside and getting stuff that no one else has really thought of. That's good.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier to stand out. Mm-hmm. So much easier. So yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Leon. I think it's a good place to end. I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure we've got other things to be doing. So yeah, if anyone isn't aware of you, which I think they probably will be, but it's Leon Hendricks on YouTube, right? Anywhere else?
That's really it. Leon J. Hendricks on Instagram. Reach out to me if you saw this. And yeah, this was cool. I mean, the way you structured the interview and just like went with the flow, I think was really good. And excited to see it.
Cool. Thanks, Leon. Have a good rest of your day.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.